County, Albany, between Chattanooga and Chattanooga, is the 24th of September, 1998. So could I ask when and where you were born?
I was born in Crown Point, Indiana, USA, in 1931. And then we were there illegally. I was in Ellis Island, believe it or not.
Ah, okay.
1931 was the Depression years. And my father and mother had come over from England into Canada. I think my mother's mother was Canadian. And from Canada, they came over to the States and started having... Well, I think they had my oldest brother's born in Canada. And then my other brother and older sister and myself were born in Indiana. And he was there illegally in 31. And I think very poor. I have a couple of pictures, but I think very poor. And then a buddy of my dad's... told the government he was there illegally, and they whipped us out of there. I guess we could have stayed. We were born there, but we were on Ellis Island for about 3 days before we got on the President Harding back to England.
Mm.
And and I think my mother was pregnant with my younger sister then, because there's an old postcard or something that I found from my grandmother that she's mentioned she still has her mound, and I think that's what she's meaning. But yes, that's where I was born.
So what was your father's occupation?
He was an ironmonger. Iron molder? Ironmonger. I don't know what it is even.
Mm.
It's to do, so I think something to do with doing things like iron railings. I think it said ironmonger. So, and work was hard to get, and I guess he had somebody's job, and his buddy fell out with him and told the government.
Mm. Mm.
So, I don't remember these days on Ellis Island, and I'd love to go to Ellis Island and find out. A friend of mine went there, and she said I would enjoy being in there. It's got a lot of history, that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I haven't told too many people that, but as I get older, I do. I listen, and, you know.
Well, nobody's going to come after you these days.
No.
So, did your mother have an occupation besides being a wife and mother?
No, my mother was 29 years old when she died. She had 5 kids and probably lost a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, we know, she had 5. She had 6 children. One died when it was a baby. And I think she probably lost one before it was born. So I think she had her hands full.
Mm-hmm.
And after she died, we moved to a place called in the northeast of England where my father's mother used to stay. And of course, I hardly remember too much of this, but my mother died. And what happened was, after she died, I guess he got nervous. It was depression time. Being a man, he couldn't take that, and I had 5 kids there to look after. So he left a message with my brother to go to the authorities to take this note, and took off and left us. So we were put in an orphanage. Do you want me just to carry on like this?
Sure.
Okay. Now, this is all I can remember. Maybe when you delve, I might find something else. I don't know. But we were in different orphanages. We were in one where my sister was so young. She must have been born back then because she wasn't on the boat. But she was so young, she wasn't in the same orphanage as us. She was in sort of a nursery. I don't know where. I still don't know where she was before she came to the orphanage with us. She was so young. And I think I was about 3 and a half, maybe. 3 and a half, probably, yes. And it was it's a tiny little orphanage, so there were 3 houses. And then we were moved, and I don't know how long we were there, but we were moved from there. I guess once my sister was old enough to be in an orphanage, to another one which was a little bigger in a different place in England, not far from there, called Lanchester. And from there, I don't know how many years we were in there, but we were in there at that orphanage for about, I remember going into Lanchester, and I think I was about 6 years old, or maybe seven. About seven, yeah. And then from there, we all were moved to this huge orphanage in the northeast of England called Medamsley. And there was eight big houses with boys in, and eight big houses with girls in, and a foster mother in each house. We had a master and a matron, as they called them then, to look after us, to sort of, they were the head of them all. And actually, that's the kind of life I remembered, and I was there from about probably 6 or 7. You see, I haven't even asked my brother how old I was in here. 6 or 7 until I was nearly 16.
Mm.
And in those years, of course, we went to school, and my brother and my two brothers, I'd see them now and again. I'd see them on the way to school and back, but we didn't. You see, their houses were further in the grounds to what ours were, so the girls didn't mix with the boys. We had our own playing field and everything else. It was the same orphanage, but you just didn't, unless you're on a message going somewhere, you know, you might see them. I'd be very proud because my younger brother used to play the bugle when we all had to gather for the courtyard. He used to play the bugle for it to gather us all. So, and I was very proud of him then, my younger brother. So I was there until I was about, 15 and a half, 16. Not quite 16, 15 and a half. And what they used to do in those days, you were in their care until you were 18, but they used to find you a job anywhere between 16, when they thought you were ready for being on your own outside. So they would find you a job, and it used to be in the olden days, as we used to say in the olden days anyhow, that they used to always find the girls' housekeeping jobs, like they were the maids, somebody's maid or something, which I dreaded. But I was one of the first group they got together and said, oh, there's the mills down in the cotton mills down in Leeds.
Mm.
And they had hostels, big hostels, where girls from all over England used to go, and Scotland. That's where I had my first I loved the Scottish girl. I had a crush on her so much.
And, you know, I'm going to ask you about that later.
And then so we worked in there, and went in the hostel belonged to the mills, and I worked there for about a year and a half before I went into nursing.
Mm.
I went into nursing when I was about 17 and a half. Now, I may be going too fast for you. I may be missing things out. I don't know.
I can go back and ask. So just as you like to tell it.
So I was about 17 and a half when I went back. And I used to go back and see them at the orphanage because, you know, that was your life back there. And, you know, at least how you're doing and all of this. And you used to see the other kids in there. And I remember when it was time for my brothers to go, the boys would usually go on farms or something like that. And my two brothers went on farms. And you know how farms, they'll take you in, and so you could stay there. But they were visited now and again to see if everything was okay. And so they were on farms, and they'd visit us now and again. They'd come back and see us. Or now and again, we'd get permission, we could go out and see them as we got older.
Mm.
But I went back to the orphanage about when I was about 17 and a half because I wanted to go into nursing. And I thought, I'm in their care until 18, but I want to go in now. So I went back to see the matron. By this time, the master of the place was dead. He was a sweetheart. But he was dead, and I talked to her, and she thought she was thrilled. She said, you know, you go into nursing, you're out of our care anyhow. So that's what I did. I went into nursing, and with nursing, I used to stay in. I used to have a nursing home to stay in England, that I thought was a great place to have. So that's what I did. And I went into nursing in 1948. And there was about, I think about six or eight of us in the same class. And what you used to do in England in those days is you used to have 3 months in the classroom with a sister tutor. And I look back on this old sister tutor now, and I see that sister tutor was, I think she was one of the girls, I really do. Not that I ever got it, but she kind of liked one of the older women that was in the same class. But she very strict, very, very strict. But I was used to discipline like this anyhow. You walk through the door before her, she'd drag you by the scruff of the neck back and say, don't you walk through the door before the sister tutor, like she was God, you know. So you learned fast. But I was in nursing, I suppose, from 48, 49, 50, and I came to Canada in 51. Now, I hadn't finished my training for about 6 months. I had to do another 6 months. Mm.
Which you 40, did here?
End of 47, I did it, and then I've got 48, 49. No. When I got here, and I'll go back why I came to Canada, I met a nurse, a nurse, Mac, and we fell in love. Oh, God, she was a year ahead of me, in a year's class ahead of me. And when I think of the things we did then, I could cringe in front of all these. We didn't have any shame. We didn't ever do anything wrong. We just sit in the nurse's living room in the afternoon when we're off duty, and we'd sit with our arms around each other. Never thought of anything. Or we'd, you know, somebody would be playing the piano, we'd be singing and looking at each other's eyes. I cringe today when I think about it. You know, I was only 17 and a half, 18 maybe by that time. Mark was a year ahead of me and wanted to go home. She was Canadian, and her family were over in England, and they wanted to go back. So she was finished her nursing all, but she had to do another 6 months. And then her family went back, and in that 6 months she had to do obstetrics, or midwifery as they called it then. So I gave up my training, and you know, the matron of the hospital tried to warn me. I realise now she had me in and said, you know, you see too much of her, and don't give up your career, and I'm going to Canada. Mm-hmm. I gave up my career like that. I was so struck. And when I got here, of course, I got a big shock that they said, oh, you don't have enough education to do your, and I'd already done nearly 3 years of nursing there. And they said, you'd have to do another 3 years here. That's if you have enough education. Mm. I remember the registrar was Miss Dick. I could have called her something else by this time, I'll tell you. But and I remember crying that I couldn't do my nursing, but that's all I knew was nursing. And the Royal Mills, of course, you know. I was at the Royal Mills about a year and a half, 2 years maybe, the most. So that's all I knew. Mm. So what I did then is I thought, well, that's all I know. And so I went private nursing in a nursing assistant in a children's hospital for 6 months. Well, because I had to make some money. And this girl was called Mac McDonald, Lorraine McDonald. So Mac and I lived with her mother and her stepdad and her brother. And she was working as a nurse, and I was working as a nursing assistant. Mm. And but I did break my heart when I found out I couldn't carry on. I thought that, you know, it was one of the best things I did after I realised afterwards. But I think I'm getting ahead of myself here. We lived in Thornhill with her mum and dad and her brother in a tiny little house. And her mother was thought the sun rose out of Matt, but sort of she resented me a little, I think. Uh-huh. I think she thought I was stopping her daughter from getting married or something. Anyhow, I was with after nursing, I think I nursed in the sick children's hospital about 6 months, and then I thought I can make better money by working outside private nursing in houses. taking patients. And you can work 7 days a week if you like. I remember it was $8 a day then. I thought that was great money. Mm. $56 a week. I thought, wow, $56 a week was a lot of money there.
After the wards.
We thought, yeah. And because when I arrived in Canada in 1951, I mean, things were really here. Really, really tough, I found. You know, even her mom and dad didn't have any money, you know. Nobody had money. So I worked, and we used to work 7 days. She'd be doing her nursing, and I'd be doing mine, taking different cases. You can stay on 7 days if you like, or you can stay on a case for 10 weeks and then take a week off if you want, but we never could afford the time to take off. And I quite liked that. At least it was nursing. It wasn't what I wanted to do. It wasn't the same. But it was what I knew. So in the meantime, while I was doing that, I started going to night school to take shorthand and typing. I thought, I've got to change my career. I've got to start somewhere. So that's what I did, and took shorthand and typing, and while I was still nursing, because I could study at night if I was on night duty, you know, if the patient was sleeping, I could study, or I could write, I could do anything. And so I did that. So Mac and I were together, all together, about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think 6.5 of those years were pretty happy, because we thought we were the only two in the world. How many of us think that, eh? We thought we were the only two in the world. And until we went with some straight girls to Cape Cod, to Provincetown, of all places. And we went to Cape Cod, and I remember Mac saying, we're looking around us, we're thinking, my God, there's more than us around here.
What were the clues?
The clues were them holding hands, and it just was so free, and the straight girls were saying, I sense they're queer here. Anyhow, Mac disappears at night, goes off, and she gets a soft girlfriend down there. She's like a kid in a candy shop. She just, that was just wonderful. And that knew these straight people. She took off. And it was after that that things started getting from bad to worse with us, because she went wild. But she didn't, she was like a kid in a candy shop. Which one can she have next? We had a friend in England that we met that lived beside my brother. Her name was Norma. And just before we left for Canada, I would think about 6 months before I left for Canada, Norma got polio. Remember, polio was really bad in those days?
Yeah.
Well, she got it really bad. She was a friend of ours, and we used to go around together, and nothing was ever said about gayness or anything. Or, you know, we just were close. And Norma got polio. And we used to sort of go to the hospital and look after her. I remember we were working in Middleborough, maternity hospital at the time, just before we left for Canada, and she was in the part of the hospital for polio, and we used to visit Norma, and it was found out that we'd visit somebody with polio, so in those days, and I remember being in the matron's office, she's telling us off about you should never be on duty. It's when you've been with somebody with polio, they just go in her bathtub and take a bath. Would you believe? A bath. And go back on duty. Would you believe that? but Norma, we used to write to when we came to Canada and back. Norma did survive, even though she had it pretty bad and took a long time to learn to walk again, and she always had a limp and stuff. But she did survive, and we used to write back and forth. And I can't remember how many years after we got here, probably about 3 or 4 after writing to Norma, that Mac got her to come over here. And so she came over, and she was living with us for a little while, and then it got that her and Mac were too friendly. I mean, to the point, I was so naive in those days, to the point where Mac would ask me if I'd like to lie in the Chesterfield that night with Norma and her were going to bed. And I'd let them. Break my heart, but let them. And yet we were still all friends. And I think about it now. Anyhow, Norma eventually did go back to England. I guess she found out there was just no future here. She couldn't get a job or anything. We used to keep her, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And she went back to England. And through the years, I think Max kept in touch with her. And through my sister who knew Norma, she's always said, Norma says hello to you and stuff like that. Then after a few years, after Mac and I broke up, which was about a year and a half after we first, when we came out, when we met other gay people, that's when I met Bobby. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of questions you want to ask me that I've missed out here.
So before this relationship with Mac,
mm-hmm.
Was she the first?
No.
She wasn't the first. Okay.
Oh, yes, the first. It was all on my side how I... And that was the Scottish girl that was at the mill.
Right, okay.
Jean McAlpine. Just love Jean McAlpine. No, Jean McAlpine was about... I was about 16 years old. And there's a lot of Scottish girls that come to the mills too, and they were staying in the house. We used to have some fun, really. There was nice times when I think about it. And she worked in a different department in the mill. She worked in weaving, and I worked in spinning. And I was friendly with all the Scottish girls, I kept, for some reason. A lot of them weren't friendly with the Scottish girls and when they first came. But I remember I talked to the Scottish girls. I thought they were very friendly, and I talked to them. So I just sat at their table. Well, it got to a point where you sort of get to know them and you get feelings about one. And I got a feeling about this Jean McAlpine. Now, Jean must have been 20 then.
Mm.
Probably 20. And she lived in Ayrshire, her and her family. But Jean was there and, we used to go to the movies together and stuff. But with the group, always with the group. But in my heart, I loved her. In my heart, I just used to follow around I just think she was just a great. I never had these feelings before. Just used to love her. But she didn't seem to, it was natural for her, it was just a friendship.
Mm.
I was just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I was just adoring her, really. Everything she did was right, and it must have been right. I mean, she's older than I am. But we never dated. We never went on dates. I never did go on dates. Until later on, when Jean took me home, I met a Scottish guy. She was going with a guy, so was her sister, and her younger sister. I was at a dance and met Jimmy McLaughlin. So Jimmy McLaughlin and I used to go out as a double date with her and Johnny, who she later married. I guess I used to go back and forth for the different holidays to Scotland. She used to take me to her mother's place to Scotland. Norma was from an orphanage and didn't have anywhere to go for holidays and stuff. So she used to take me home with her. And we were a wonderful family. They really were a warm family. I was so shy and so naive in those days. But Jean and I used to sleep in Jean's room. And I remember that she used to put her hand under my head and I used to snuggle into her. But no sex, nothing like that, or anything even thoughtful about it. But if I ever accidentally put my hand where her breast was, she'd sort of just quietly remove it.
Mm.
It's funny.
Do you think she knew how you felt?
I think she did later on.
Yeah.
Because this went on for a while and we know good friends and stuff, but... And of course, you see, I was brought up with a guy too. He wanted to get engaged, and I couldn't do it. I just didn't want any. There's no love there. I was just doing it because I wanted to be beside Jean, go on double dates with Jean. And then what happened was she left the mills, and we used to write back and forth from her home, and I used to still go to visit her. In her family after that. And then she wrote to tell me she was engaged to be married and she's getting married on the so-and-so. That was like it broke my heart. It just broke my heart. I, I, I didn't want anything else to do with her. It was like I was hurt. And she must have wondered what the heck was wrong with me. And we still write and stuff for a little while, and then it sort of just died out. I went to nursing, and I guess that's how we really did get. She got married, and she did marry Johnny, who was a nice guy. And I've never heard from her through the years or what's happened to her, whatever, or her family. But they were a lovely family, her mother and dad, and the three girls. Yeah. Anyhow, so then I met Mac at the hospital, and I can't believe it. I fell head over heels. Well, I remember we had a little wind-up gramophone, you know, in my room. I used to have a wind-up one. She used to come in and listen to music, to records and stuff, or we'd spend a lot of time together. And then I would be on night duty and she wouldn't be. And you got an hour off your dinner. Guess where I stayed? I used to go to her room in the middle of the night, like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, whatever time my supper time was. And it got to be a known thing. This is just, we were really falling in love then. I'd get inside of her bed with her. I mean, I'm on duty, but I'm on my lunch. I didn't care about eating. I wanted to be with her. And I used to jump in bed beside her. And then when my hour was up, I'd go back on duty. Until it got to the point I fell asleep one night and someone knocked on the door. They knew where I was going. It must have got to be known, but I still wasn't thinking. But I mean, in those days, I was naive. I just wanted to be beside her. And this is when she was going to be going back to Canada anyhow, and asked me to come back with her, and I said, sure, I would. I'd love to come back. And I didn't care about nursing. I didn't care about anything. I just wanted to go to Canada with her. Didn't even think about my own future. Didn't think about it. And I remember the matron calling me in and warning me about giving up my nursing career, that I see too much of this girl. And I can't remember all she said to me, but I know she was trying to warn me about this life. But I didn't take any notice anyhow. I left and went to Canada. We went to Canada together.
That matron, was that the first time you had ever heard anyone else give any suggestion that this life was was wrong somehow?
Because I thought I was too close to this woman, to this girl, that you should find other friends. It's not healthy. That kind of thing is what she was telling me, you know.
And you hadn't read in your nursing training or never heard?
Nothing.
Because I'm wondering sort of when you were growing up, you know, what kind of values you were raised with. And I'm wondering if growing up in orphanages was perhaps a little different in that regard. Were the orphanages run by a denomination of the church at all?
No, it was a Protestant orphanage. All of them were. But it was not religious.
Okay.
It was not religious, but like, if Catholic children happened to come in, then they would be eventually sent to a Catholic home. We went to a Church of England church every Sunday, all of us, but it wasn't. And we went to Sunday school in the afternoon, but that's it. I mean, there was nothing sort of religious pounded into us. But no, I'd never heard of this life at all. Never heard a thing about this life.
What about sexuality generally? How much information were you given about the body, about sex?
Nothing.
When you began to menstruate, for
I was just
going to
tell you that. I didn't menstruate until I was nearly 16. Well, I was 16. Yeah. Now, I knew about such a thing, because in those days you didn't go and buy a package of pads. You had something you had to make your own. And I remember the older girls in the same house I was in sneaking around once a month, something like this, and washing these things out and having them dry and put them back on. They used to do that in the olden days. But nobody told us anything. And they let me go out of that place, not asking me, do I know? But I think the foster mother was... first of all, the spinsters, and you know, I think she was too shy to talk to them. I don't think she had the wherewithal to talk to kids about sexuality, such a thing. No, I don't think so. But they let me go, and I realized that they let me go out. And I was expecting any time, because I knew I'd heard from the kids at school. When I was at school, the older kids, some of them had started and some of them hadn't. And I used to say I'd started because I would, at 16, I was a little late, wasn't I? You know, so. And I used to say, yes, I had to. But that was all. Mm. Until one day I started, well, I was in the mills, and I thought, what's wrong with me? And then I used to get terrible cramps. And I had just figured it out myself. I just had to. Nothing sexual was ever talked about in the orphanage at all.
So when you began to get crushes, like how did that feel? It's a sort of that was a physical, a body thing as well as an emotional thing, or and did you
more of an emotional thing?
Right.
More of an emotional thing. I mean, the only thing I ever tried was I know I wanted to touch Jean. Mm. I know I wanted to touch her. But, like, she was 20, so she might have probably known about this stuff and or been warned about it all. In those days, I don't know, they didn't hear too much about it. She certainly didn't talk to me about it.
You were just telling about the girls in the old village, particularly small stuff.
Nobody discussed that. Nobody discussed that. Two or three of you in a room together.
I can't remember who shared my room there or who I shared it with. I can't remember. All I know is that Jean used to come down and see me now and again. Sometimes I'd have cramps and I wasn't going to work and she'd come down and she'd stroke my head and said, you'll be all right, you'll be okay. And you just rest today. And she was very motherly with me. Mm. But I don't remember any sexual talk at all in the mills. Now, it might have gone on with some of the older folk, but the six of us, you see, we were sort of watching out for each other too. And the six of us were quite naive kids coming out. And when you were 16 in say, 1940, what would it be? 1944 to 45, like that, 46 maybe. Kids of 16 didn't know as much. Certainly I didn't, because I wasn't brought up that way. All we knew was that in a house there may have been 16 kids in one house. And they may be from 5 years old, 3 years old. No, not three, because they'd be in the nursery. 5 years old into 15. Now, when you got to be around about 11, 12, then you looked after a younger one. Mm. And you used to call them our chargers. These are our, and we had to teach them how to darn. We had to teach them how to sew. We couldn't go out and play until the one you were looking after, who was your responsibility, had no holes in her socks. Or if she did, you better teach her to darn, because then you've got to darn them. You know, couldn't go in the pool until. So you had to look at the kid you were looking after. And so at a very early age, they made you self-sufficient. Everybody had a job to do, a chore to do in the morning, depending on your age. There would be eight of us in one bedroom, eight of us in another bedroom. Little beds all the way around the room, huge rooms, little beds around with a little dressing thing, and with somebody's maybe four people's job to make the beds in that room, maybe four of them in this room, whatever, or two of them. And we did all the cleaning of the house. Between all of the kids, we did it. Mm-hmm. We'd light the fire. The oldest one would get up and light the fire, put the porridge on, stuff like that. Really? Somebody would be doing a bucket of potatoes every morning for the dinner that night. I mean, you learn to do things. And as much as we didn't like it then, we realized that it made me self-sufficient. It made me comfortable doing things. I mean, I had a much better... I shouldn't say better upbringing, but I really did have a more livable anyhow, so I could at least look after myself properly. When I first met Bobby, she couldn't look after herself because his grandmother used to look after her, you know. She used to cook for her and look after her and do her laundry and stuff. So they did teach us an awful lot. And as you left school, before you went out into the world, as we called it, they may be a year, year and a half. So they had a sewing room that the girls would go into, and there'd be a sewing mistress, and she'd teach you how to make things. Not that I hated that, but I was in that for a little while. Hated it. They also had a laundry, which both the boys and the girls would let. The hard work would be done by the boys. The girls would be in there too. They had a tailor for the boys to learn tailoring. They had a shoe repair that used to make their own shoes. I mean, they had all these shops in the orphanage. It was a huge place. A painter's shop. Used to paint all the places.
Mm-hmm.
So the boys, the older boys, were getting a training too. And when I think back on it, it was really a wonderful place.
Mm.
I didn't like it because when I went to school, elementary school, no, not elementary school, the one after that, I don't know what you call it in England now, but when you're 12 years old, you took a secondary school or something examination?
Well, I don't know if it's the same in New Zealand, but we went primary, intermediate, then to high school. So I don't know, here it would be sort of junior high or something?
I think like that. And I remember that they used to give you, at the school, most of them were orphanage kids going to the one school, although there were some outside kids, as we called them, but they're mostly, because there was a heck of a lot of us in that home. And when you were on about 12, there was an exam, and I suppose that's junior high. You took an exam, and if you passed, you went then to the, I guess you called a secondary school.
Right.
And I happened to be one, but there was a half a dozen of us had passed, and I happened to be one of them. And there was only two women and two girls and four boys had done. So the six of us used to go to school on the bus, go to a different school all the time. And I remember that for once in my life, everybody else, there was nobody else there from an orphanage except the six of us. And we were sort of pointed out, you know, we were orphanage kids, our hairs were straight, it was cut every month, and whether you wanted to or not, your hair got cut every month. And you wore a tunic and a blouse and stuff, you know, and didn't dress the same way as the others, you know, like you had a uniform. And it wasn't a school uniform, it was an orphanage uniform.
Mm.
It was a white blouse and a tunic and the stockings and the shoes and stuff. And I remember I used to get really, really hurt about some of my friends making fun of my short hair and here is a spring, and what I have is black stockings on, not socks. So with my pocket money, we used to get pocket money there, maybe 6 months a week or something. We used to get pocket money, and you could save it and buy what you want with it. And I remember buying socks and sneaking them out of the house and putting them on at school and sneaking them back in my bag when I came home, so I could be like the rest of them out there, you know.
Was there ever any talk amongst those kids, you know, were there any assumptions about your morality because you came from the orphanage, and, you know, stereotyped assumptions about
the bad kids went there or something like that?
No, not the bad kids. It was just like, it was like, oh, they're the homes kids, that sort of thing. We were lower than they were, you know. Yeah, they're sort of the homes kids is what they used to. And I remember in an art class once, I had to draw my best friend. She had to draw me, and she drew me awful. She drew me with straight hair. You know, it was bobbed here. And I remember starting to cry. You know, just awful. And because we were different.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I think you sort of, and I think this is why I fell for what's her name? The Scottish girl, Jean. I think why I fell for her is because she was so kind.
Mm.
I think I look back now and I think that's what it is. So anyhow, that was the difference then in those days, that we were different and we had to go home to a home, you know. And the other kids would talk about what they did last night and all of this stuff. But, and for years later, I would not tell people. Years later, I wouldn't tell people I was in an orphanage.
I was ashamed of it. And that's how they make you feel. People. I'm sorry.
Do you want to stop for a bit? You were just telling me how you think that your brother found one of the letters
that I wrote to Mac.
Yes.
While she was in another town, and she stayed my brothers and sisters-in-law, and I used to write to her, and apparently he found a letter. Oh, I think he told my older sister.
Mm.
And she told a friend of hers, and that's how it got back to me, that he found a letter. That was just before we came to Canada. So I think in his heart, he knows I'm gay. Well, he does know. He knows how long Bobby and I have been together. So he does know. But nobody mentions it now, family.
Mm.
Nobody mentions it at all. And my sister is sort of a... she's a different person than what I am. She's very... she would never talk about sex. I often say, I wonder if her and her husband ever had sex. Because they know they're not demonstrative of each other, they have no children, and I'm often wondering if they ever do have sex. So this sexuality is not a thing they can talk about.
Mm.
And so I don't. And yet they treat us as a couple. You know, they take it for granted, the birds with me. So, what was I talking about when this was off? Where am I up to now?
I was going to ask you, you know, there was the crush that you had on Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the first clue you ever had about your feelings for women? Or can you identify things any earlier than that in retrospect... might have.
I remember in the orphanage when the older girls were getting older and getting bright, I was very interested in looking at their bodies, I guess. But nothing was ever done. I never had feelings like that before until Jean McAlpine.
Mm.
But then I was a late starter, you know. I didn't menstruate until I was 16, you know, so I was a late starter here. My hormones weren't up in the, you know, so... But I just know the love I had for her, that it was... and I couldn't understand the love. But I look back, I think, is it because she was so kind to me? Is it because she was older than I was? I just know I just loved it a bit.
What did she look like?
She was a good-looking girl. She was always sort of matronly to me. Always so worldly sort of thing. But not loud, you know, quiet sort of girl, and a nice person, a very nice person, very kind. And her whole family were like that.
Mm.
I just thought she was beautiful. I just loved her to bits. Loved to be near her, wanted to be near her, wanted to sit across the table at meals and rush for the same spot. I wanted to be beside Jean, and it was... When I think about it now, I cringe because there must have been older girls there, must have seen it in me. So, I know they must have in nursing, because that matron got back to that matron's ears about me and Mac, for her to tell me.
And you talked about when you had that spare hour, going up and lying in.
We used to have sex.
You did.
Oh,
you did.
Experimenting.
I was
yes,
so was Mac. Yes.
Oh yes, we used to have. I mean, it started off with hugging and kissing and stuff, and then we used to just. I used to get undressed and get into bed with it, and I loved it, just loved it to bits. And then I used to look at my watch and I gotta go, you know, go back to work. I mean, this is
a little disheveled.
All disheveled. Well, I had to wear uniform off, you see, otherwise it would be disheveled.
It's wrinkled.
But yes, that was the first person I've ever had sex with, is Mac.
And did you have any idea what to do, or did you just...
And neither did she... Well, I don't think she did either. I think I was the first one that she had an affair with. Because she was really... when she was at another hospital, before she came to our hospital, she was pretty wild, I think, with men. one guy, as a matter of fact, I think she was. She never told me whether she ever had sex with him, but she, you know, they used to have a lot of fun with the guys and stuff. So I think I was her first girl too.
Mm.
So we were mostly experimenting. We knew where we wanted to be. We knew the area we were interested in. and you know, probably fumbling around like a couple, that felt good to us. So certainly not the I mean, I know it was her first. We thought we were the only two in the world, so I know I was the first for her too.
Mm.
And she's probably learned a lot more since then, and I certainly have. You know, Bobby, so. But it was, I guess that went on for, remember after the matron told me, it sort of suddenly hit me that everybody must know. Then I started being careful.
Mm.
I started being careful, but put my hands around her neck. I mean, you can't keep your hands out. There'd be lovely music on, somebody would be playing the piano, and there'd be lovely music, and we'd be sort of hugging each other. And I think, oh, when I think of what we did.
Who made that? How did you actually become lovers? Like, presumably you knew each other for a little time beforehand.
Yes, we became good. I can't remember that. I'd love to remember that. Maybe it's deeply hidden down there, but I can't remember that. It could have been me. It could have been her. I don't know. Knowing Mark, it probably was her.
Mm.
But I catch on fast. I know that. But, you know, it's a long time ago. It's 40-odd years ago now, 48 years ago. And I can't remember who made the first move or how we got into bed together. I can't remember that. I just know that there was a deep feeling and that we wanted to be together all the time. I remember feeling very ashamed after that nurse had matron had talked to me, thinking there's something wrong.
Mm.
You know, she then made it feel sort of dirty. I guess because I was caught in her room at night, they put two and two together. Nobody ever walked in the room because we used to lock it, because each door had a lock on. But they had to knock on the door to get me to go back to duty. So I'm sure it got back to the matron's ears. And I can't remember the words she used on me, but I know she was warning me about this life.
Had you ever heard anybody talk about gay men at all?
Never.
Okay, so...
Never.
Hmm.
No. There wasn't a sniff of it while I was growing up.
Mm.
Not a sniff. I was very bewildered. I mean, once we found out there's more of us, it was a wonderful feeling. There's nothing wrong with me. There's a lot more people the same as I am. And I wondered sometimes, am I gay because I was brought up in an orphanage? Because I've always been with women? Because I've always been with the females? You know, I was brought up at a very early age, all females.
Mm.
Then I went into nursing, all females. I was in the mill, all females. And, you know, I wondered if it was that, but I was very comfortable with females. But I never saw any of this go on. When I look back, and I have looked back at the mills, thinking, did I ever see other two women together? No, but I was naive. I realise that now. I was a real naive kid, 16 years old, 16, even 17. So.
So what about after you came to Canada? So it wasn't until you were...
1951.
Okay. And you went to Provincetown.
Went to Provincetown about... Oh, well, Mark and I lived with her mum and stepdad for a while. And I can't remember just how long, probably a year. And then we bought a house in Richmond Hill together. Never had a house in my life. It was wonderful. We bought a house, a little story and a half, just being built. And I remember we had to work 56 hours, 56. I mean, we had to work about 56 hours a week. We really did to keep, we used to think, which bill shall we pay first? It was awful. And then she would go to the Sick Children's Hospital, but maybe different hours than me. It was a long way down. I used to go by streetcar. And I guess we lived there about a couple of years. And then sold the house. Oh, when I think about it, sold the house back to the builder for the price we paid. And that was, I guess we were moving down to Toronto then, because it was too far, so we sold the house. Moving down to Toronto, and we had an apartment here. I cringe when I think what we did. We were so scared to buy another place. Why not sell it? We didn't know anything else in those days. So we sold it back the bill at the very same price we paid 2 or 3 years beforehand. And then, of course, we were in Toronto in an apartment, in various apartments. And that's when I met Bobby after that Cape Cod deal. We got friendly. Well, it was Mark and I were friendly with four other girls. And the six of us used to take jiu-jitsu on a Monday night downtown. I don't know how we met them. I guess it was after Cape... Oh, I know. We met them in Cape Cod and they gave us their address. I remember calling her queer in Cape Cod when I found out she'd been with somebody. Mm. You're a queer like them. So was I. But I wasn't admitting to myself then. I am not happy with that. I years later, when I think what I said to her, I said, "You're just a queer." I said to her, "I was jealous." That's about it. You say some funny things when you're jealous, don't you?
Yeah.
You do. Anyhow, I met Bobby at a pub one night, the most awful pub, and I shouldn't get into this because then it's where our life started. But,
well, that's okay. You can talk.
That's the best 40 years of my life. That's when I start blossoming out. I used to be a shy, quiet person when she first met me. And she sort of brought me out. What happened was the girl she was living with was a Dutch girl, Chum. And they were just friends. I think Chum probably liked Bobby, but... No, there was nothing physical with Bobby. She just didn't see her that way. And so when there were six of us used to go play jiu-jitsu or do jiu-jitsu and go to a pub afterwards. Well, I hate beer. I always hated beer, but I wanted to be with the crowd. And we'd go to this place called the Continental, the most awful place in Toronto. It's not there anymore. It was on Dundas and Elizabeth, the Continental, where... The dregs of society used to go. I mean, there was pimps and prostitutes and gays. I never saw a gay woman that used the word fuck before in my life. And they used to work, they were tough. Oh, awful. But we used to sit around the table and you wouldn't dare look at somebody else in those days because they were tough in there. But that was the only place we used to go to afterwards, have a beer. And that's where I met Bobby one night with her friend, Chum. And Chum, of course, met Mac. And maybe we ought to tell this story together. I'm thinking. I can go on now.
That's okay. Yeah. So you went to the Continental with a group of women you'd actually met in Provincetown?
Well, they gave us their address and we called them. And so we used to be friends. Then the six of us became friends. We used to have them over to our apartment with parties. And, you know, we used to go places together and stuff.
Mm.
We're all very young. And we used to go to the island, the Hammond's Point together and this sort of thing. And one night when we went to the pub, Bobby was there. Mm. And I'd heard of this Bobby show. And I'd heard that she had quite a reputation as being sarcastic and, you know... And I remember the very first time I met her, I didn't like her one bit. She was talking sort of a smart aleck, you know, that sort of thing. And I've forgotten what she'd said to my girlfriend, Mac. She said something. And I just looked at her but very quietly said, "My, aren't we tough?" And she said she just wanted to shrivel down. And that was our beginning. I didn't like her that night at all. But then... We started inviting her and Chum over to party. Oh, there was a party for Chum's birthday and Bobby's birthday. And we had a party at Max and I. And she knew Chum by this time, Mark, and liked Chum. So we had a party for them. And that's when I really got to know Bobby.
Mm.
And we were really just good friends at first. It wasn't a mad, passionate love thing. We were just very, very good friends. We talked a lot. And it grew into a love. Even after when we lived together, I mean, that's when it sort of grew. And one night Mac is talking to, Bobby's working nights at the Bell, and Chum is at, she's also a Bell girl, she was at our place, Mac's in my apartment, and they're talking. I knew that they'd fallen in love, and they were talking quite freely, and by this time I knew it was over between Mac and I anyhow, I just knew it. There wasn't the same feeling, and I could sort of see it. And I remember her saying something about that they were in love, and I said, well, then why don't you live together then? And Chum says, well, where would you live? Where would I live? Because I said, oh, I'll go pick up Bobby from work. And it was me that said to her, do you love me? And she says, of course I love you. And I said, well, enough to live with me? I mean, I was going to live with her. She wasn't going to live with me. So that's when it happened. And Bobby says, wow. Like, you know, she was a runner on the nose going, wow. But that's how we got together.
Mm.
And it grew deeper and deeper. It wasn't a fast thing that... It sort of it grew after we met. After we went to live together, it grew more and more.
Mm.
So... And we had a little furnished apartment on a second floor somewhere on Dusen Street. And we were really poor. Believe me, we were all very poor in those days. We used to look for street car fares, and you had to be very careful at work and stuff, but we were happy. So I think I better leave the rest for when she's here. You think?
Well, I'm going to backtrack a little bit,
okay,
and ask
that's
you
what
some,
I'm hoping
some,
you do.
Some other
yeah.
stuff. Because it seems to me that there's quite a bit packed into those years from when you came to Canada and meeting Bobby. How long after you came to Canada did you and Mac head off to Provincetown?
I would think it's probably... see, probably 3 years
okay.
after that.
And
maybe
that,
4. We were together, all together, 8 years.
So sort of mid-50s?
So I was... yes, I met Bobby in 57, so... it was before... It was about 56, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first time that you'd ever noticed...
If there was anybody else.
Anybody else.
So we never went to pubs. We used to just live as two friends and with our mom, and we had our own room and stuff, and nobody thought anything of it.
And when you saw it, how many days did you spend there?
I think it was a 2 or 3 days only.
Mm. And you saw them right away?
Oh, yes. We were with these straight people, these straight girls. Twins they were. And we'd become friendly with. And we started sort of looking around, and we see people holding hands, and I think we went in to have a meal or something. And I don't know why it first hit us, but it did hit Mac. It didn't hit them as quickly as it hit us. Mm-hmm. But we realized there's people like us here. Didn't I even have time to talk about it too much because of what these straight people are. Oh. So we did nothing about it that weekend. It was, we went home, and then we went back down together without them. That's what happened.
Without the straight girls.
Without the straight girls. That's what happened. And that's when she thought you like a kid in a candy shop. She just thought, which one shall I have first? So I also had a one-night stand there. The only one-night stand I have in my life. Mac had gone off with somebody, and I was... left at the, in this pub by myself, and this
butchcomb as always. She wasn't tough loving, but she was butch. And you could tell the difference in those days. And we're talking together and having a drink together, and all of a sudden she said, "You want to come home with me?" And I thought, well, we're not going to sleep there anyhow. God knows where she is. Mm-hmm. It's funny how it didn't seem to bother me so much then. So I realised it must have been over, because it didn't bother me too much. Except when I got home and realised that she'd been a half a dozen of them or something. I mean, she was going nuts. We were there 2 or 3 days, and she went nuts. But I went home with her, and, you know, I don't even know this girl's name. That's how, but I learned things with her boy that night, I'll tell you. She did things to me that I'd never had done to me before, and I loved it. So,
would you like to elaborate?
Well, you know, nobody had ever gone down on me, never, ever. Mark and I never did that, never.
So know. Before that, it was just hands?
Yes, hands on, yeah.
Right.
And, geez, you know, I can hardly look at the girl the next morning. And she said goodbye, and that was it. And I'm thinking, what have I done? I felt so dirty the next morning. But I still enjoyed it. And I don't even know her name. And from that, you know, when I look back and I think, oh, so I've had 3 girls in my life. Sorry, 4. There's one more that comes into the tale with her.
Okay.
Because she'll tell you how she's feeling while this is going on. And about 8 years into our relationship. We both had a little... There's quite a story there. Yeah. It hasn't been 40 years of not touching anybody else. We both had one off the track there. Into our 8th year, something like that. 6 years to 8 years or something like that. 1969 was a bad year. I know that. It was 1969. Anyhow, that night I went home the next morning and we went home, and it was from then that our relationship sort of broke down between Mac and I, because I realised that she was interested in somebody. I also realised that we'd grown apart. And I think the fact we'd grown apart is because we were always with strict people and always had to sort of behave ourselves, you know, with her mother and her dad and her aunt and her grandmother and stuff. I was like part of the family. We had to act like friends, and so we did.
You were just talking about I guess the gradual demise of your relationship with Mac and your time in Provincetown, and I was wondering if in that there was that first visit with the straight girls, and then you went back. Did you talk to her, or did you talk to anybody else there about women who loved women? At what point, because you commented earlier that you called her queer.
We had a fight.
Okay. Where did you learn the word?
Oh, I'd heard that word somewhere. Probably from the straight world. I'd heard that word somewhere. And I think for years, I mean, we would hear this and know what we were, but it didn't seem to mean us for some reason.
Okay.
It didn't seem to mean us until I found that she wanted other women. And that came out. You're queer. I slept there and wasn't very pleased with that at all. I ashamed of that and I never would have repeated it again, because she reminded me that I'd called her queer, and I said, yeah, I know. I wasn't one of them. Didn't want to be one of them. Didn't want to be known as one of them, I think, at first. But I think by this time we've been around straight people far too long. And it's a funny thing, this is when we start not having straight friends anymore. We just seem to just drop them.
And the friends we had then were in the gay crowd. You know, you have you meet one, and then you meet another, and you meet another couple. And that's how it's grown in the years, through the years. Just, I mean, I have some straight friends from work, but it's a different life. You know, you grow up with them, and nobody ever questioned me while I was working why I wasn't married. No, I think somebody did once. Once you were having a drink with her, and she said, "Why aren't you married?" And I said, "Well, you know, I never wanted to get married. And I don't think everybody in this world should be married." And that was always my answer to that. Some people are meant to be married, some people are not meant to be married. So that was my answer to the straight people. Mm. I used to ask that question. But then they get to a point at work where they don't ask you anymore. They get used to you, you know, and it's like, they know you have somebody at home, but they don't want to think about it. So they don't ask questions. And I could kid with them about, you know, how you get dirty jokes and sexual things with the heterosexual life, and just used to, you know, used to add to it, and, you know, as my life went on. But nothing was ever said about me, except once. My boss at City Hall. But that comes into the other story, I think. Mm. With Bobby and I was with Bobby at the time. Mm. But only once that... And what happened is we were good friends, my boss and I, but I think he liked me too much. And he was a married man, and we used to go to coffee and stuff like that, and I was still just friendly with him. But I could tell that he liked me too much. I used to get that feeling sometimes. And one day he said to me that somebody at work had said that I was a les. And all of a sudden it came to me, he was saying this so that I would not be a les with him, sort of thing. Mm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
a trick, and it hit me all of a sudden. So all I did is get on the defense and said, I don't have to prove myself to anybody. You know, nothing in this life says I have to prove myself to you or anybody else what I am. And he said, well, I told him there's no way Flo's a les. He says this. But I said to Bobby later, he was trying me out to see if I would sort of give in to him.
Mm.
And I caught on. But he was still my friend until he died, this man.
Mm.
He died when he was 70-odd, and he was still my friend. But he liked me, I knew he did. And his wife was very jealous of me for some reason. Every time my name came up at home, he said his wife used to get very... And I said, why is she getting jealous, bud? There's nothing between us. I used to say that to him. Why is she getting jealous? We've never done anything wrong. So I don't know what he was doing. He was trying to show people that he liked me, and I guess it showed.
Mm. You know?
But that's the only thing that was ever at work ever brought up. Maybe one gay boy threatened once that used to work with me. And he was friendly with us both, and he got drunk one night and he said he was going to tell my boss I was gay. And I can't remember why, what the circumstances were.
Mm.
And Bobby got home and she phoned him. And she said to him, you dare. Yeah. He never did, but he threatened to. And that was the end of our friendship with that. And we got to the point where we didn't trust gay boys for some reason. It's only in the later years, but the older men, the older guys, we've got sort of, we can deal with them or we can't. It doesn't matter now. But at one time we were friendly with them, you know, a couple here and a couple there through our lifetime. And we just didn't trust them, you know. It always seemed like they let us down somehow. Always got the best part of a deal that was going on or something. So we really haven't had too much to do with gay. We have good friends now that are gay men, you know. But during our lifetime, we were friends with two gay boys that we were very friendly with, and girls used to go to the cottage, and they used to have a one-room shack or something. We all four of us used to sleep in the same shack, and, you know, we used to have good times.
But he sort of met somebody else. His partner committed suicide after he finished with him. And he went on to get another guy, and they sort of did the dirty on us. So we just, that was it. He disappointed us again. We keep saying to each other, can't trust them, that's all, just can't trust them. But it's not fair to say that, because now, we've got friends, male friends, that are, you can't trust. Mm. It's not because they're male gay men, it's because it's the person.
But so you weren't, this was not, you didn't hang out with gay men before meeting
no.
Flo, though?
No.
Bobby, sorry.
With Mac? No.
Yeah.
Didn't know any.
Right. So there weren't any in your circles after you came back from Provincetown or any
no.
sort of...
No, all women.
Right.
Yeah.
Even did you, when you went out to the bars in Toronto, were they sort of mixed bars?
We didn't go. There was only that horrible Continental. And once I met Bobby, we didn't bother going back anymore.
So how many times do you think you went there?
Well, as long as we were taking jiu-jitsu, the six of us used to go there. And so we probably, after I met Bobby, I don't think we went there a couple of times after even. Mm. It was just some place to meet, because now once we got to know some other gay people,
right.
then we would meet in our houses and have parties and stuff like that and go places. There was just no way for women to meet in those days at all. And that was the most atrocious place. I was scared to go to the bathroom because there's pimps and prostitutes and it's awful.
Now, did you, in those days, did you identify with the butch and femme scene? Did
yes,
you,
so very
did
much
you
so.
Identify as femme?
Well, Mac and I never did. Mac and I never did. And then when Bobby and I got together, she had these little feelings of being butch and I was femme. And I got rid of that. I don't believe in butch and femme. I think you got the best of both worlds here. So, but she was kind of... the old-fashioned butch, just a little bit like that, because we both grew up in those days where you'd see the butch and some butches, you know, like, don't touch me. As a matter of fact, going back to that one night stand I had in Cape Cod, she would not let me touch her.
Oh, okay, so she was
one of
stone
those.
Butch.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Is that what you call them, stone butches?
Yeah, a stone butch.
She was, and I think about it now, she didn't want me touching her. Funny.
So she just wanted to make
that
love
slays
to you.
Me, you know. That slays me. It really does. But when I first met Mark and I, never. We were always just. I mean, there was not such a thing as butch and femme. Never heard of it until I met the gay crowd, and then you could pick them out.
So Mac herself wasn't a butch.
No,
in any way.
No more than I was. Mm. No.
Mm.
We both had our moments, and it was not. We were never. Butch or femme, never heard of the word, never acted it.
Mm.
We were just two friends liking each other and loving each other. But when I met Bobby, there was a little bit of that, you know, but she got out of that. And I think, like when I first met Bobby, Bobby didn't like herself, I don't think. And she gets annoyed when I tell her that. You didn't like yourself too much when I first met you. You used to wear dark clothes and you were sarcastic and stuff. You didn't like yourself very much. But underneath it was a facade. I got under that, and it was... she got rid of the facade eventually.
Mm.
But in those days, you couldn't. Even in that Continental, you could not look at somebody... Like if somebody looked at somebody's girlfriend, you'd get some big butch coming over, using the foulest language in your face and threatening your life almost, you know. It was awful in those days. And the butches all seemed to wear white, stiff shirts, you know. And this amazed me, really. I never liked this stark butch and femme, never did. It makes me cringe today when I see it even. Because I don't think it's necessary, but then I don't feel less, you see. So ask me something else. But I realised that must have been a storm butch.
Yes, by the sounds of it, yes. when I have some questions about physical sexuality and about romance also. But one of the interesting differences that seems to come up, and I should remind you at this point, if there's any question that you feel is too personal, you just tell me, let's move on. When you read the American literature on, for example, the Buffalo scene or the New York scene or whatever, they discuss how lesbian communities seem to be and broken up into different groups that had different sexual practices.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the groups weren't into oral sex, some were. Some groups used various apparatuses, others didn't. And if you read what little Canadian literature there is, and in the talking I've done to Canadian women, it seems that there's a bit of a difference between the American scene and the Canadian scene, because one doesn't necessarily have a sort of division of that group were doing oral sex and this group weren't.
No.
And also, it doesn't seem that as many Canadian lesbians were using dildos, for example.
No, I don't think so. I've never heard of a dildo until a few years ago.
Mm, okay.
Never heard of it. We certainly didn't use any of those, but we did have oral sex all the time. And it was one of the ways that we used to. We used to try every part of where we could, or younger. As you get older, you know, it's very hard because you're stiff and you've got your arthritis and you've got your this and you've got your that. And it gets to a point where it hurts. So, but when I think how agile I used to be, it was wonderful. So, but yes, I realize that there is, and especially today, there seems to be a group that likes their sex toys and their dildos and stuff. And you see, the way I looked about dildos is, if you want a dildo, then you must want a man, you know. And that's how I looked about it. But maybe I'm not. I think what I do is I associate dildos with stone butchers.
Okay.
That's how I associate it with. I never felt, I was always satisfied, I didn't need any of that stuff. No, we had quite a good sex life. It gets less and less and less as you get older. But we did used to have quite a good sex, but I think there's something takes its place as you get older. Hugging and cuddling and stuff like that is important, very important. When you get older, I think, because you're not as agile. You're just not as agile, you know.
Did lesbians discuss sex, you know, amongst friends very much?
No.
No.
Never, no. I don't remember the jokes about it like there is now, or the inferences on it, and I don't remember all of that at all now. You know, it depends on the group of friends you're with, too. If you're with sort of a... There used to be real, I guess, what you call stone butchers downtown, and they used to be... We used to call them rough, sort of rough people, you know, and God knows what they did. I don't know. And then there was the uptown girls, you know, the girls that were... And I think there was always a sort of a division there, you know. We were sort of the business uptown girls, and they were the rough types downtown. No, we wouldn't associate with them, that sort of thing. And I think it's the same as a straight life, really, you know. I've always felt, just because you're gay, you don't have to like somebody just because they're gay. You don't have to be friendly with them. You don't have to be, you've got something in common with them, you're gay. But that's all, you know. We're all different. So what else would you like to know about sex?
Well, I don't know. I'm wondering if, you'll be familiar with the expression, lie back and think of Mother England. perhaps.
No.
No. And it's an old, you know, or live, one of my other narrators calls it lie back and think of the empire. Do it for the empire.
So oh.
That old attitude that, you know, with, with heterosexual sex where women just sort of, oh, I'm going through the shopping list or something.
Yeah.
Just get it over and done with.
Yeah.
Does that have any relevance for you
Never.
In terms of your past?
No. Mm. No. You see, except for that one night stand, I always felt like you have to be in love to have sex. It's a personal thing, and you always have to be in love. But then I surprised myself that night. But maybe my own hormones were playing up. Maybe I was ready. Who knows? Maybe my jealous spirit was coming out that I knew where she was or something. I don't know. I know I enjoyed it. I felt dirty afterwards. And I shouldn't have felt dirty afterwards. Didn't tell anybody that for years. But no, never any of that. We were very comfortable with each other with sex. And we didn't dive in right away anyhow. It took us a while to get used to each other and to do different things and as our love got deeper, we tried out more things and never felt sorry if we didn't feel like it, but when you're young, you always feel like it.
Was there like a learning curve?
Oh, definitely. Mm. Yeah, I think a learning where you try different things, you know. Mm. Yeah, I think yes, there was a learning curve. I don't think we realized it then, but yes, that was a learning curve, I think, where you try anything to make the other one feel good. And as good as you want to feel, you want her to feel just as good. Mm. And there was a sort of a learning curve there.
Well, what about romance? I mean, growing up in the, you know, it's the post-war era, and you've mentioned that you used to go to movies.
Uh-huh.
I'm wondering if you had any ideas from movies or from books or anything like that of what, and of course the ideals that were put out there were all heterosexual ideals,
mm-hmm.
what an ideal romance and courtship and relationship was supposed to be like. Did you see many films that sort of gave you a picture of what things were
Nothing that stands out in my mind. The only thing that stands out in my mind is the very first time I read The Well of Loneliness.
Mm. How old were you then?
I was with Mac when I read that. That's when we knew there were such books out. There's only a couple in those days anyhow. And I guess I was with Mac, so I was in my 20s.
Can you remember how you found it? Where you got it?
Probably passed on to one of the new crowd we'd met. Probably passed on from there. I can't think otherwise. And I was very depressed when you finished the thing. It was a very depressing book. And any other book I read in those days was always like, there's never a happy ending for gay people. There's never any happy ending for lesbians. There's not, you know, even the early movies were like that too. I think the very first movie we saw together that was The Fox. Called The Fox, it was two women. Susanna York, I think, was in it, and somebody else. And but one of the lesbians had to die in the end, always. You know, there's always a sad ending to it. It's only in the later years where it's okay. Mm. So, but no, romance. It might have been in my head with Jean McAlpine. It might have been. I mean, I'd love to be wherever she was. What are you doing up here?
I'm allowed.
No, you're not. You better stop talking.
Oh, Jesus.
God resist it. You can't resist it. Okay. I remember with Jean McAlpine, it was sort of a... I used to imagine things. And then
what sort of
and with Mac when I first met Mac and when I was in nursing, it was very romantic. You know, we used to do little things for each other and send each other little cards and things like that, you know. We were very, very careful though. We used to always tear them up. We've got a box full in there that we've got. Yeah. But we used to tear them up after each other.
especially after my brother found the letter that I wrote to her.
Right.
After that, that was the last I sort of wrote down. I wouldn't write it down and send it through the mail at all. But romance, in the orphanage, there wasn't, I mean, we're so void of romance or feelings. To me, I can't remember any feelings that I had, even as I was getting on to 15 and 16. Can't remember anything like that. I had a female teacher at school that I used to have feelings for. I thought she was wonderful. And I look back now, I'm thinking, I wonder, you know, did it, we all have crushes, and I used to have a crush on her. That was about the very first female I think I had a crush on.
Mm.
Yeah. And I was probably around about 14.
Where's the dog, Flo, do you know?
She's right here, dude.
Does she have to go out at all?
No, she's quite happy here.
Because it's almost 4 to 6.
Well, she's
usually goes out about 5.
Do you want to take her out?
Come on, girls.
Want to go out, girls?
Come on, babe. This way.
Yeah. That'll be on the tape.
Well, that will be on the tape, yes. That's just fine. Yeah. I only have a couple more questions. I'm wondering about... If you can remember flirting in those days. I don't know, did you that one night stand, did you flirt with her, do you think? Or
I didn't think so, but I was interested when she became interested in me.
Mm.
I didn't think I was flirting, and I remember being very shy. Because I was shy in those days anyhow. I mean, we hadn't met gay people too much then.
There's a scene in Forbidden Love that's from the sort of fictionalized novel part of the film where, you know, and of course it's that those old books, they always had the darker haired, slightly older woman seduces the younger blonde one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's standing, the darker haired one is standing at the jukebox,
mm-hmm.
and she gets the bartender to take the other woman a drink.
Yeah.
And then she sort of gives her the signal with the eye and that, and then moves over to her table. Do you think that that's at all realistic about the way relationships were formed?
Well, I was surprised I saw that because I thought, well, I must have been missing that because I don't remember anything like that. I mean, we used to meet, and I think there used to have to be a chemistry between you that used to, I mean, the chemistry between us grew. It really did.
Mm.
With Matt, there was a chemistry right away.
Mm. Okay.
But then I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me.
Mm.
You know. But as that scene in that that kind of, I never seen that done. I thought, oh well, maybe I've missed it. Who knows? Maybe I missed it because I don't remember that kind of thing then. But then we didn't know any. We didn't have any clubs here. You know, we weren't worldly in Toronto with gay clubs. Not until Al and Paddy opened theirs out at Gerard and Pape, and Bobby and I went to work in it. They were friends of ours that opened a gay club.
Mm.
But as far as standing at a jukebox and... no. I don't remember any of that.
Mm.
No, I don't. I don't remember any of that sort of romance thing. I just know there's feelings, and the feelings we used to talk a lot in those days. Which when you had feelings, you used to talk. I don't know what they do here. They want to go to bed first and then talk. But we used to talk a lot and get to know each other. We did, and I know Mark and I did. We talked a lot before we got together. I can't remember how long after we met that we got to bed together. But I remember that we did get to know each other and liked each other and felt something, you know. But that's about it, I think. I told you, we had a pretty dull life to what some of the kids today have. But after meeting Bobby, we got to know a lot of people. And... have made a lot of friends in the last few years and gone through different... I find that you have different groups and you might outgrow them or they might outgrow you or something happens and they don't want anything else to do with you. You know, we've gone through all of that, but then you still, you see them today and say hi, and, you, and it's the old crowd still.
Mm.
So,
when was the first time that you began to use words like gay or lesbian about yourself and feel comfortable with those? What year would that have been approximately?
Lesbian, never.
Mm.
Lesbian only in the last few years. Since we started going to MCC and since lesbian became, but it was always just gay.
Right.
And yes, I at first wasn't comfortable with gay even. I don't think I used it with Mac. I don't think we used it with Mac. Don't think we even used it with each other that we were gay. We just knew we were like those people. It's since I met Bobby.
Mm.
And we got to know more people and listened more and talked more and read more and stuff. And that I never liked the word lesbian. I could not swallow that at first. Just couldn't swallow the word lesbian. Now I can.
Now what?
But
what
I couldn't.
Was,
it seemed like a dirty word to me, lesbian.
Did you get more exposure to that word or other words sort of before feminism came along in the late 60s? Did you,
no,
after Provincetown, did you read or?
Yeah, but it never said gay.
Mm.
The stuff we used to use. Gay, maybe in the books, but never lesbian, it seemed, you know. And then when the kids start using it, and I think it was after feminism, started it, that the word lesbian was thrown in your face, and I hated it at first. So did she. We both didn't. I hated the word lesbian, and I think now I'm used to it, and it's. But it used to be dirty to me. It was like people were lesbians, you know, and I think probably because my boss had said something about you're a les. Somebody had said you were a les. And that to me was a slur.
Mm.
So I think I don't talk it as much as dirty, it's a slur. But there was nothing wrong with us all being gay or all being homosexual. You know, I don't know when we got separated from the men and the women.
Mm.
But we did. I don't think it's a bad thing now. It's fine. You know, now you know you're talking about men or women. But didn't like it at first, would not accept lesbian.
How did you, as you became aware that there were these words out there and that a lot of people were very hostile and a lot of people felt that this was not acceptable, how did you feel about yourself? How did you keep thinking about who you were?
That's in the 60s about, wasn't it, when they start going. I felt okay after, I mean, we knew what we were, and we knew we had all these friends that were, and it was almost like belonged to a club, almost. I didn't feel bad about it then. It was earlier on, before the word lesbian was bandied around so much you got used to it, that I hated it. I felt fine about myself, and it took me a while to, I knew I was gay, but it took me a while to... I think MCC Toronto helped us. We've come out a lot since we went to MCC Toronto. We've learned a lot. Now, it could be because of these are we've been going now for about 9 years, nearly 10. And in that 10 years, there's a lot happened in the world about gays and lesbians. Plus, the church fights for the rights of lesbians and gays and encourages you to fight for the rights of for lesbians and gays. And so we've sort of been embroiled in it a lot, you know, we've heard a lot about it. So we've sort of got used to it as you got older. I like the freedom now of, if somebody ever asked me today that didn't know me, are you gay? And they did do once. Then I would say yes. But one day I would have said no.
Mm-hmm.
Only because they, you know, they were so disliked so much and so hated, gays and lesbians. They probably are today, but I don't care anymore. As you get older, you don't care. It doesn't.
You want to be accepted.
But if you're not accepted, that's okay too.
But I wish I could talk to them. I wish I could talk to them about it.
My older sister, I could have. I think if I saw my brother often enough, I think it would come out and I would talk to him.
Maybe not. I don't know. I'd love to know what was in that letter. Because I used to write a lot to Mark. I'd love to know what was in it. We probably talked about sex. Who knows? Who knows what we're talking about?
I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
I was going to ask, in the years leading up to 1965, what sort of difficulties did it cause for you in your work? Were you still, when you were with MEC, you were still doing nursing?
No, I met Bobby in 57.
You met, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So there's that time, 1957 to 1965, say. Were you still involved in nursing, or what was your
occupation? No, I went to City Hall, actually, after I met Bobby.
Okay.
I guess it was a couple, it was 59, so in 57 I met Bobby. In 59, a friend of hers that worked with a Phyllis, who she found out was gay, who came out to us as a couple one day. Phyllis and Bobby and I sold everything we could possibly put our hands on to sell and went to England. We were going to go for a year. England and Europe, want to see the world. And so we sold everything we could. Now, we were away 5 months altogether before we got home. Phyllis had to come home early because her father had died. But Bobby and I stayed, stuck it out for 5 months before we ran short of money. But what was I about to say there about that? What was the question you were asking me?
Well, you moved into a different work area, and I'm wondering if...
When I came back, I went to City Hall in the health department.
Okay.
September 59.
You had to keep your relationship...
It was a different life at work than it was at home. I mean, you just didn't even give a hint of it. You listen to these jokes at work all of your life. Not so much in the early days, but you used to all of your life. You used to, and laugh with them. You had to. And it was just two different worlds. It was just two different lives. And it's funny how you can click it off like that as you come out that door into this door, and then click it off again when you go the next day. Strange. And hide it all these years. I don't think anybody else knew. I think my boss had a feeling we were, but he was afraid to say so. He tried to tell me, but I think it was his own. He was looking out for himself there. Thought he would scare it out of me, really. But yes, it was two different lives altogether. I mean, if you were found out you were gay at work, you may not get your job. You may have lost your job. Certainly at the Bell, they would have. And I don't think I would associate anybody that was gay if I knew in City Hall. I didn't want to associate with them. And they, with us, you didn't in those days. You know, everybody kept their own little secret and came home to whatever, you know. But as the years go on when you work in one place, you forget that you're saying, Bob and I went to so-and-so last night. Or my roommate. That she was my roommate. My roommate and I went to so-and-so, you know. And that's how you used to get by with it, was your roommate. I think women are much more fortunate than men living together. Men living together, it's very hard. As it was in those days. Women living together can get away with it. But it wasn't easy in those days. It really wasn't. It was a hard life. I mean, when I think of what the kids have today and the freedom they have today, it's wonderful. I'd like to be starting out again today. It'd be wonderful. So,
Well, is there anything else that you would like to add about your personal experience leading up to, say, 1965, thereabouts?
You keep saying 65.
Well, that's technically when... The study period really goes 1910 to 1965, but I am, you know, sort of, I'm getting information beyond that.
Yeah.
But most of it's before feminism, because, of course, feminism changes so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I think as feminism came in, you got sort of more and more information about gays and lesbians, and I would not be sitting here talking years ago, for one thing. I could not sit here and talk to anybody about my life or how I felt or sex or whatever. Sex? God, no. Maybe I'm doing something you're not doing, you know, I don't know. But as you get older, you... and maybe this happens in heterosexual life. As you get older, you get more... You get wiser because you're picking up more information as you're going along, you know. I think in the last, since 65, since feminism, we've come an awful long way very fast, the gay and lesbian population. I really do think it's we've come a long way. And let's hope we come further. But it was hard in our days, back in the 57, 58. It was very hard. And you definitely had two lives. Everybody had two lives, I think. Or you didn't have a job. I mean, we had friends that were investigated, and we still don't have friends in Ottawa, Bobby and I, and worked for the government. And they were investigated by the RCMPs. And they told us some awful stories about, I mean, they were really badgered and harassed, and, you know, to admit that they were gay and give them more names, please. Like it was a crime. I can't imagine them getting away with that today at all. I mean, look, you know, you'd never hear of a gay person in office at all in politics. You do now. So the world is getting better, but it's a slow process. So I don't know whether I helped you or not, but...
Thank you very much.
Yeah. If there's anything you want to ask me, you... I certainly wouldn't have talked about sex.
Why?
I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have sat down and talked. I couldn't. Couldn't, possibly. I mean, you think back at your own life, you know, when you're young. I mean, when I was 16 and you were 16, there's two different worlds here, huh? You know?
No, I think you've covered all my questions very well.
Okay.
Yeah. So thank you.
Well, I don't explain things very well, but I talk as I think.